you're getting into to video editing now and making videos. So you're going to get mani-pedis now. How does it feel?
Someone commented, even though I made sure to cut my nails and file them before the last video.
But they now, still yes, were not good enough.
Now they're pretty. So I'm ready to go. We're going to have some badass videos coming through, some good tutorials, stuff like that.
Are you going to leave Bitcoin to become a hand model one day?
I'm getting sick of you pressing record while we're having pre-episode conversations. You should not have that power. No single man should have that power.
I have that power, and I will exercise it as I see fit.
We need a multi-sig record button. I want to authorize all records.
What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Rabbit Hole Recap. We're only 4 days since our last drop of Rabbit Hole Recap, but 5 days since the last recording. 3 days since the drop, 5 days since the recording.
And those are always, the live ones are always more fun than substance, I think.
Yes, I would agree. The vibe in the crowd is always lively. And actually, we must apologize. There was no mic in the crowd, so we didn't pick up the question. So if you listen to the latest RHR before this one, there's some one-sided conversations going on there.
Yeah, it was our third live broadcast. Live as in with people present. We should have many more, and you know, we're just taking notes and learning as we go.
Yeah, that was recorded many blocks ago. Right now we're sitting at block 591,255. My mempool has 2,300 about transactions in it right now, and the price according to the trade block XBX index is $10,123.82.
Are we ever going below 10,000 again?
Who? I don't know, man. No. I'm saying hard no. Hard no.
Prepare the dump. We're going to be under 10K before the episode drops. In like the hour it takes to drop it.
We'll keep the chart up. We'll keep you freaks posted.
It was under 10K earlier today.
Yeah.
I thought of you. In the morning I woke up, I ripped a piss, and I stacked some sats.
Boss. Yeah. A nighttime stack, you know.
This one was a morning stack.
You know, you could stack it any time in the day.
But it was still a piss stack.
Yeah. Speaking of piss stack, and if you're going to do it, make sure you're using the Cash App. This episode of Tales from the Crypt brought to you by the Cash App, our favorite app. I don't want to speak for Matt. It is really my favorite app. I use it every day. Their boost program, at least if I'm buying Bitcoin, that's what I've been using most recently. You can buy, sell, send, and receive Bitcoin on the app. You can send it back 32 addresses straight to Wasabi or Samurai CoinJoy if you so please. And then back to the Boost program. You get a special debit card that's connected to your Cash App. If you have cash on it and you have your Boost enabled, you can go to merchants like Chick-fil-A, Whole Foods is what I used yesterday, coffee shops. Some people are saying they still have the dollar off coffee shop Boost enabled and they're still using it. Hang on to it while you can. The Boost do change up, but they're adding new ones as well. DoorDash was added recently.
You get grandfathered in if you keep the Boost.
Yeah, if you keep it on, if you only want to use one Boost and you don't turn it off, I think you get to grandfather that Boost in.
The freaks told me I'm supposed to tell you, don't buy coffee. You have to make your own coffee and stack sats with the change.
Well, freaks, that's why the last Boost I used was Whole Foods, because I have been making my coffee. I think you guys will be happy to know that I have not bought coffee in 6 days. 6 days since the conference.
Very nice. Very
the
nice.
Conference was only 4 days ago, so it's been 4 days. 4 days. Marty math for you. Use the code STACKINGSATS. Get that $5. Square's going to send $5 to Owls the Cross. Go download the Cash App today. Then when you're done doing that, go check out Unchained Capital. They're 2 of 3 multi-sig vault service. Over the weekend, we met with the Unchained guys in person, and they've got like some cool stuff they're working on with the vaults in particular, some cool signature schemes and stuff like that. So if you are looking for somebody to help you with your multi-sig solution, Unchained is there to be a signature and a 2 of 3 multi-sig. You can always have control of your coins using Ledger, Trezor, any combination of the two, and move your coins whenever. But if you ever get in a pinch and you need Unchained to be that second and 2 or 3 multi-sig, they are there to help you in that pinch. On top of that, they have their loan services. If you ever want to use your Bitcoin to get a Bitcoin collateralized US dollar loan, Unchained is letting you do that too. So go to www.unchained-capital.com/vaults. That's www.unchained-capital.com. patreon.com/vaults. It's a mouthful. Go check them out. And we also got a shout out today from a good friend, Arbed Out. Very good friend who's actually going to be joining us for our 100th episode coming up in the future. Should we tease that or should I cut this out?
No, definitely. I'm super excited for that episode.
Yeah.
He's a good friend. He's an awesome dude.
Yeah. I'm pumped to sit down, and I think you guys are really going to like that episode. Arbed Out is somebody with an immense amount of knowledge, one of the most well-read people I've ever had the pleasure of meeting within Bitcoin, and somebody can and tie a lot of things together from history to our current context. And he wants me to sing something. I am at least from the Philadelphia area. He knows that, and he wants me to sing a Philly chant. It's we're from Philly, fucking Philly, no one likes us, we don't care. And then it goes from there, and it's pretty much like, fuck you, we don't care who you are.
You're not going to sing the whole thing, Marty?
I don't know the whole thing by heart. I'm a bad Philadelphian, but it's we're from Philly. I'm pretty sure that's it.
Okay, when we get him on, we'll
sing it
chant
in unison. Yeah, and I think he's just trying to analogize that to people may hate on Bitcoiners, and it's you can hate us all we want. Jason Kelce sang that chant after the Eagles won the Super Bowl, after they finally brought home the Lombardi Trophy, after being underdogs throughout the playoffs and the season. So Bitcoiners, akin to that Philadelphia Eagles championship team, the underdogs. And you know what? Hungry dogs run faster.
And it's also pretty ironic that that came through a donation, which due to some recent events is a little bit of irony, you know?
Yeah. There's some shitcoiners out there who think that we don't get these shout-outs. They're real people. I can show the transaction ID to you, but that would dox myself. Why the hell would I want to do that? And I don't want to dox the listeners either.
Be ridiculous.
And some people aren't worth your time, Matthew. You have to come to grips with that. You know, there's some crazy people, some lunatics out there who claim that you're lying about going to an event that you very clearly went to. And you're lying so much you'd go so far to fabricate notes from in a journal. There's some lunatics out there, man.
Yeah, absolutely. We already gave him too much airtime. I apologize for bringing it up. I just thought it was ironic that that was definitely some innuendo in that donation. I fucking love it. So thanks, Arbed Out.
Shout out to Arbed Out. Go follow him if you're not. He's
one of the best follows on Bitcoin Twitter.
Criminally underfollowed. He's way smarter than I am. If you're following me, not him, you're doing it wrong. Trying to pull back up the list here. Yeah, let's talk about the weekend, the BitBlock Boom concert. Conference.
Katy Perry came and she performed.
Katy Perry. No, she's a shit queen. Remember when she got her nails done with like Monero and Ethereum and all that?
Yeah, I know. That's why she's on my head. I don't know. That's why I thought of her.
The BitBlock Boom conference. Yeah, we were there. We did a live app. Obviously, if you listened to the last one, you know that by now. It was a good time. It was the second time I've been. Your first time. What'd you think your first time around?
It was a small conference. It was cheap. It was accessible. Gary Leland, the guy who runs it, I had met him in San Francisco first for Bitcoin 2019. He's a great dude. It was so happy and so inclusive and so nice. And everyone, you know, there was, you know, the more famous Bitcoiners there and just like regular Bitcoiners that
please,
no one sees.
Please
and
don't
stuff.
Use the term famous Bitcoiners. Please.
No, I'm just saying, you know, like it was very much, you know, like Safe was there, right? Mm-hmm. Like Safe is like, he wrote the book on this shit.
It's true.
And we're all like mixing together and talking and having great conversations. And then there's all these anons who no one really knows, but are doing all this good work on Bitcoin and stacking sats every day and running their nodes. And it was just really troubling to see, just like all these so-called respectable people attack us over it, with like very inflammatory claims when they hadn't even seen like the talk, it's specifically Bitstein's talk. They hadn't even seen the talk in question yet, which is now released for free. It's in the show notes.
Yeah. So for those of you who are unaware of the situation that unfolded on Twitter after Michael Goldstein gave his speech on memeing Bitcoin to the moon, which is actually a very good talk about like human psychology and framing and the art of argumentation and debate And
it was my favorite talk of the day. Yeah. I literally tweeted out after the talk. I was like, this might have been the best Bitcoin talk I've ever seen. And then I was caught completely off guard by it. And most people were triggered just off of like pictures of a slide, not even. And then the transcript got released, but they were already triggered at that point.
Yeah, but it shows the lack of critical thinking and the lack of due diligence that goes into some of these people's reactions. Like, you had to have listened to the talk and gotten the tone and inflection in context to understand exactly what he was saying. Like, he was trying to prove his point. I would argue, like, verbally as well. Like, there's a lot of stuff, that connotation that comes into play that does not get translated via transcript or a picture of somebody on a stage in a slide.
But even with the transcript, they like intentionally picked and choose parts. Like the beginning of his talk, he says, you know, welcome to my ridiculous TED talk. He literally says, like, I'm not telling you to like go out and insult people. Like, you should be doing ethical trolling. You should be like educated. It should have substance, you know, like it should actually like teach people something while you do it, not just, you know, attack people for how they look or how they sound or how they do all this other stuff. You know, he specifically specified the difference between a no-coiner, who's someone who like legit attacks us and acts in bad faith and hates Bitcoin, versus a pre-coiner, which he literally said, I love them. I love my pre-coiners, which I got a kick out of because I also love my pre-coiners.
We all love our pre-coiners. Hey, you pre-coiners, we love you. Just know. The no-coiners we have problems with.
And then it's like the hypocrisy of the whole thing is that, you know, the definition of harassment on crypto Twitter seems to be it's only harassment if it's a Bitcoiner who's speaking. Because Bitcoiners get the most abuse out of anyone in this space. It's constantly happening. And all the people that wrote 7-tweet threads without reading this talk sit there completely fucking silent when Bitcoiners get attacked with ridiculous attacks, like absolutely ridiculous attacks. And they're not substantive attacks at all. You know, they're like calling us fascists. They're calling
baseless.
Us frauds.
Yeah. You're completely baseless. And no, but it like just if you're trying to be an objective observer of the space and you're just looking at the interactions and you're not interacting yourself, and you see one day somebody writes like a 7 thread of many multi-tweet threads about anti-bullying and stuff like that, and then literally 2 days later somebody very high up within another community's ranks, if you will,
the number one company in Ethereum,
yeah, goes on one of like the most vitriolic diatribes in the I've seen, at least the last 5 years that I've been paying attention. And crickets, like nothing. It's complete hypocrisy.
And then they just sat there completely silent. They just didn't even bring it up. It's yeah. I just
not that. We're, and it's not like we're not like saying anything's unfair. We're like looking for somebody to come to our defense or anything. But it's like let's just point out the way it is. Like yeah, fuck them is right. And
no, Bitcoiners came out with tons of support, and they're fucking awesome. Like we love Bitcoiners.
Yeah.
But like. Like, don't be a fucking hypocrite. You know, like, if you want to, like, grandstand on, like, ethics and morals, like, that's fine. But, like, be consistent.
Please. Yeah. Like,
the whole reason for all this saltiness on Twitter right now is because shitcoins price in Bitcoin is just fucking plummeting. Like, the ETH price is, and Bitcoin is at, like, the lowest it's been since, like, before 2017. Like, don't cite me on that, but it's, like, very low. It's, like, broken all the
technical
yeah, like the technical whatever, what do they call them,
resistant
lines and stuff, yeah. And they always do this. They did this when the price was dumping after the ICO. It was no longer Bitcoin 2.0. it was let's all get together, let's all work together, we're all in this together, this will work. Then the price started pumping during the DAO and it was all flippin' bullshit talk. Now it's Bitcoin 2.0 again. Then the DAO hack happened and the price plummeted and they were like, we're all in this together, Bitcoin and Ethereum don't compete. And now they're fucking, and then the price pumped and they were flippin' like motherfuckers. They have flippin'.watch and all this stuff. And then the second the price comes back down, now, you know, Bitcoiners are toxic and we should all get along.
Well, yeah, we all get along and hey, Bitcoin and all other chains are going to be partners going into the future.
We're all working together. Like what? They're competing monies.
But I think that's the one thing Bitcoiners have consistently acknowledged throughout time is that blockchains are war. Like this is a battle. Like you're and Bitcoin is well positioned to win, in our opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of people, I think they phrased it as, I don't really like the term Bitcoin maximalism, because, by the way, if you don't realize, like, Vitalik created that to sell his ICO. And it was kind of cool that, like, a bunch of Bitcoiners embraced the term to try and give it power, and I, like, respect that idea, but I think it allows them to, like, kind of control the narrative a little bit, so I don't love it.
I don't like it either, but I can pick up where you're stumbling here and just say, like, the whole crux of why that dude from Consensus came after Udi and I is because the history has shown that depending on where the market is or the price of ETH or Bitcoin is really dictates the sentiment of the communities and how they're posturing against each other, particularly how Ethereum postures against Bitcoin. And like why a lot of people from Consensus got pissed off this week is because Udi and I were calling out the fact that it is very obvious that like they're trying to whitewash history and say that like the people who built Ethereum weren't pumping ICOs back in the day. But that meetup I went to was hosted at Betaworks, but it was like there were representatives from Consensus running the meetup and telling uneducated startup founders to launch ICOs. Like it was completely irresponsible.
The whole chain not only did the chain ICO to begin with and set the precedent, they prioritized it. They were advisors for all these different companies.
Like the internet doesn't forget. There's like pictures and
they can't whitewash it. It's obvious. It's obvious to everyone who looks at it. We have Vitalik admitted on Twitter that he's proud to have legitimized the pre-mine model. So that's tweet stamped in the Bitcoin blockchain forever. But anyway, I remembered what I was going to say. A lot of people describe it as Bitcoin maximalism is descriptive, not prescriptive. And basically the idea is, And I agree with this idea too, is that I don't, you know, these technologies are mostly permissionless, especially if it's a fair proof of work launch. You could do it anonymously. Anyone can do it. Anyone can fork if they want to. No one's trying to go out and stop you from running your ICOs or do all this other stuff. But at the end of the day, Bitcoin maximalists, I don't really like the term, like I said before, but at the end of the day, we think that all these things are going to trend to zero in terms of Bitcoin. Like if you have another token that is all these chains, they want them to be interoperable among the chains. But if it's easy to move in and out of the chains, like why would you hold anything other than the hardest money? That's what you're going to hold. That's what the majority of people are going to hold. So it has nothing to do with like stopping people from, you know, stopping competition in free markets. It's that competition in those free markets will mean that Bitcoin will be the better investment over time.
Yeah, even like an example that Ethereum enthusiasts have been pointing to this week is like that TBTC where you can use Bitcoin to get ETH to participate in the DeFi or whatever. Like if you play that to its logical conclusion and your options, if you do, I would never do this, but if that does become popular and on the Ethereum network you have choices of collateral between Bitcoin, Ethereum, like this wrapped Bitcoin, Ethereum, or any other tokens, like you're going to use the strongest collateral, which are going to be Bitcoin. So that could actually, that app proliferating on the Ethereum network could basically deny or not, or could basically just make it so Ethereum is basically a sidechain of Bitcoin where the value is Bitcoin at the end of the day. And that's what's driving sort of the collateral of that network.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be a sidechain with an unpegged utility token that like floats on the free market. And like you'd also see this if we get which would be better because it would have even less trust. If we get networks that add Lightning network support, if we get atomic swaps between networks. And I actually think that Bitcoin being the most liquid, the most secure chain, with the best monetary policy, the hardest money, it'll be advantageous for all these altcoins and all these other chains to support it as much as possible, make it as simple and frictionless as possible to go between the two chains. And it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because they need to do it because the other altcoins and the other chains are going to do it. But once they do it, there's really no reason to hold their token as an investment because you just hold the majority in Bitcoin, and then whenever you need to to use some kind of utility or whatever on one of these unpegged side chains, you just convert the most little bit amount in, you know.
Yeah, and then that is one possibility. Then you see things like Miniscript, which was just dropped this week by Peter Woola. Do we even have that on the list to talk about?
We do have it on the list. We might as well just jump into it.
Yeah, we'll just jump. So Miniscript is Peter Woola dropped the compiler this week and a website for it for Bitcoin. I'm pretty sure it's Agnot. Like, you can use Miniscript in other contexts. Or might be Minisketch. I could be wrong. We'll talk Miniscript in the context of Bitcoin. Bitcoin scripts are notoriously very hard to deal with, and Miniscript is a language that, for simplicity's sake, makes it easier to interact with Bitcoin scripts, so you can do more complex things with Bitcoin, particularly wallet developers who want to create conditions to spend. So you can make it's a lot easier for wallet developers to make, again, the conditions to spend Bitcoin harder. So you can have like an amount of blocks before you can move a coin after initiation, and between that time, like similar to vaults, you need to get that signed in a multi-sig by somebody else. And just the crux of the topic is this makes it easier to interact with Bitcoin scripts and create the functionality that like Ethereum likes to pump, and like a robust scripting, but we're making Bitcoin scripting more robust slowly and surely over time. And that's what the point I'm trying to make. Like, even though we can use Ethereum as a sidechain, it seems like the technologies being built on Bitcoin alone are even becoming sophisticated enough to do similar things.
Well, then once you have the unpegged sidechains, which are the altcoin chains that allow us to easily switch back and forth, we'll also have the pegged sidechains, which have a different security model, stuff like Liquid, right? Yeah. Where you have a federated model. It's a different security model with different trade-offs, and Bitcoiners will have a bunch of different options for them. I think Miniscript, one of the big things is interoperability across wallets, right?
Yes.
Because it like standardizes a lot of things, makes it a lot easier. Multisig specifically. I think this is actually a good jumping off point, because I wanted to touch on Rodolfo and Janine put together.
Yes. I read about this in the Bent yesterday. It's called a Wallets Recovery Page. And it basically is a depository of the different Bitcoin wallets and how they do their derivation paths and their descriptors. Because it was actually happy I wrote that bent yesterday, and that Rodolfo and Janine are working on this. because it has become more apparent to me that a lot of people assume that if you create a mnemonic phrase, seed phrase on one wallet, you can just recover that using another software, which is not always the case. Especially if something like Electrum is a great example. Like, a lot of people will create Electrum wallets and think that they can just go recover it on every wallet, but they use a weird BIP39 derivation path, and it's not as easy.
They have different words.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, even if they use the same like seed word scheme, like, so this is your backup words. So it's like 12, 24 words you have. They use different derivation paths. So when you actually put it into the wallet, it'll show up as zero coins. And if you don't know what your derivation path is, you could have issues. Now, these issues are reduced tremendously if you use one of the main wallets, right? Because you know, like, there'll still be support for it down the road when you wake up from your coma. If there's not support, there'll be at least be a bunch of people who have, like, put, like, tools together to at least, like, recover your funds. But if you're using one of the more, like, some random mobile wallet or something, like, there's a very good chance that if that company goes out of business, you might not have the information to recover your seed and recover your coins. Or if you do, it's going to be time intensive, or you're going to end up paying someone to try and go through that process. And so that gets even more complicated once we add multisig in the mix, because this is mostly talking about single key. And multisig is something that everyone should consider and should start using. I think Miniscript will help a lot in terms of standardizing that all. So it'll be like the interoperability will be a lot better.
Yeah. So again, and I think this is like very underscored advancement in wallet technology and being able to leverage Bitcoin scripts a lot more now that Miniscript is out there. Like, I don't think this is the gravity of this launch in particular has hit the market. Not saying that it would affect the price at all, but it seems like this would make it a lot easier to make more secure wallets and like make security overall, like personal security, better, because it's just easier to make it harder to spend your coins.
Absolutely. And I would push back on your earlier comment that you said it'll give us more of the capabilities of Ethereum. And there's a big difference between a robust scripting language and one that's like fragile, yes, and vulnerable. And it, you know, so you got to, it's not going to let us do it.
Yeah, that's, thank you for calling me out on that. And yeah, that was, I guess what I was trying to say there is that, we get a lot of shit for Bitcoin scripting being pretty rudimentary, but Miniscript is a tool that proves that it can be leveraged in a more complex way.
Yeah, it improves it while still keeping it secure and robust and whatnot. Yes.
Thank you for keeping me in check, Matthew.
I got you.
It's always important. You got to stay in check. But yeah, back to Rodolfo and Janine's site. So if you, I would just go look at that. Let me pull it up. What is it called?
I linked to it in the, it's going to be linked in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll link in the show notes. It's walletsrecovery.org.
Great domain name.
Very good domain name. And it's not a complete project. They are open sourcing this. They're looking for help, more documents. So if you're somebody using an obscure wallet that knows their derivation pass inside and out, go check the site and
please contribute.
And contribute. Yeah, that's the beauty of Bitcoin.
And this is a nice one because you don't have to be very technically savvy to contribute for this.
Yes.
Also, this is your first time meeting Rodolfo, right?
It was. It was such a pleasure. Such a pleasure. What a kindred spirit.
Fucking great dude. Absolutely great dude. You know, he's the founder of CoinKite, who makes the Cold Card and the Open Dime, two of our favorite hardware projects here at TFTC. And he was just... we like chilled with him both nights and just had a fucking great time. So many long conversations. And we recorded one of our conversations, and that'll be dropped early next week. And Janine, it looks like we have her on the schedule to bring her on the pod as well.
Yes, we'll be speaking to Janine next month. I'm very much looking forward to that. If you guys don't know who Janine is, she's one of the co-hosts of the Block Digest podcast, and she's a very good investigative journalist when it comes to like network security and
privacy. Huge on privacy.
Yeah.
Block Digest is great. I listen to it almost every episode. I highly recommend it. It's a longer format, like more technical rabbit hole recap almost.
Yeah, if you want to get very technical.
Yeah, so it's a nice complement to this show. You know, usually we don't record remotely. We only record locally, but Janine is just such a boss that like we would absolutely without a doubt record remotely for her.
Yeah. And it's things like walletsrecovery.org, that make Janine so cool. So yeah, we'll be speaking with her. We're going to drop the Rodolfo episode on Monday, I believe. So be on the lookout for that. Just got to give a shout out to Rodolfo just for being an overall incredible human. Me and him ended up after Safe's dinner, not arguing, in an intense conversation with an oil baron about Bitcoin. Shilling lightly. And he was a very good critic, this oil baron was. And that's something Bitcoiners should be seeking out, is very good critics. This was the first critic I've met in person in a while where I was like, wow, you're making some very good points.
He was like very much... like the stereotypical like rich Texas oil man, right? Like,
yeah. Oh, he had the hype wife who was just like standing behind him being like, he's so smart, I love him so much. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun. A lot of respect. I shouldn't say a lot of respect. The man's name is escaping me right now, but an incredible.
It's better not to dox him. Right now he's slowly going down the rabbit hole. So
yeah, he's been handed the Bitcoin standard.
He's a pre-coiner for sure. So yeah. Rodolfo gave him. Was it Rockstar Dev? Rockstar Dev gave him the Bitcoin standard and put his email address inside the cover.
I think Brian Lockhart was a part of the crew that gave him the Bitcoin standard as well.
Well, it was Brian's book.
Yes.
But someone put their email in it and was like, "Read this book and then email me at the end," which I just thought was like.
I think it was Rodolfo did that. Yeah,
yeah. Really nice show. We met Rockstar Dev, the Vin Diesel of Bitcoin.
A true legend as well.
Absolute fucking legend. We got to celebrate BTC Pay's second birthday with him.
We're going to get Rockstar Dev on this podcast, and him and I are going to get very cosmic. He's somebody who loves to get cosmic, and I was loving his energy throughout the weekend. A lot of high energy from that man.
It was just a good weekend, good people. It was great, and Rockstar's awesome.
Are we in a bubble, Matt?
A little bit.
Yeah?
But it's a voluntary bubble, and I fucking love it. You know, life's short, so surround yourself with good people.
I agree. Sats the standard. Blockstream Green. Sats are now a denomination.
We did it.
It's proliferating, man.
So Blockstream Green used to be Green Address, and then Blockstream bought them and changed up the whole UX. And now it's available on iPhone. It's definitely my favorite cross-platform mobile wallet. It's definitely the best mobile wallet on iPhone. And it goes hand in hand with Samurai Wallet on Android, I would say. Those are the two wallets I use on Android. It's a fantastic wallet. They have 2 of 2 multi-sig where they control one key, you control the other, so that they can give you a two-factor authentication ability where, like, you complete the two-factor and then they sign. And it also has this nice time lock feature where if they, because it is 2 of 2 instead of 2 of 3, so if they go out of business or something, it'll automatically revert back to you. But the only issue I had with Green Wallet was that they had like every denomination for Bitcoin except for Sats, and that just bothered me because Sats should be the standard. So big thanks out to them to finally merge that into the app.
You even had Adam Back, who's a Millibits stronghold, I believe, tweeting out that Sats is now on there and pushing stacking Sats forward.
It's been an incredible 8-9 months of seeing Sats slowly become the standard. Gradually and then suddenly.
Another newsletter you should go check out by Parker Lewis. But no, I checked. Somebody asked me randomly today, like, when did the hashtag start? And I looked it up. It was October 1st, 2018. So coming up on a year.
Correct. It was in the midst of the bear market.
Yes.
That's when all the best memes come out. The other thing that I always thought was really cool about Green Wallet, well, at least Green Address. I don't know if Green Wallet offers it, but I always thought this was like an underappreciated concept that never got traction. This was years before, like when Lightning was not even on anyone's mind, you know, no one was even thinking about that. People had the issue of if you were spending Bitcoin in person, like you had to wait for a confirmation, and confirmations, you know, they average every 10 minutes, but you never know when it'll come. You know, blocks weren't even full yet, but it was like that's not an ideal situation. And their concept was, because it is 2 of 2 multisig, as long as the merchant trusts Green Wallet not to double spend, like the Green Address team, then you could spend. And that's why they called it Green Address, was because if you spent from there, they knew it was a good address and it was fine. It wasn't going to get double spent from. And I always thought that was like it was a cool concept, just like mixing in like a trust minimized third party that like can't steal your funds, but can assure that you don't double spend. And then they could have merchant partnerships and stuff.
Why would that not be on the Blockstream Green?
I mean, no one ever talks about it. And it used to be like, that was like the plan for the original Green Address to monetize. They were going to have like merchant partnerships and they were going to assure the merchants, but no one spends Bitcoin, you know, so it makes sense that they deprecated it, but it's something that could happen in the future. I don't even know if it's necessary now that we have Lightning, probably not. I just always thought that was, I really like when people think of like simple solutions to things like that, you know?
Yeah. Where a third party can come in and be okay.
But yeah, it's trust minimized. It's still, yeah, they can't take your funds, but they can assure the transaction is not going to be double spent.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Pretty
interesting
cool.
Dynamics. Staying on the vein of Sats, you've been playing with the Sats app lately.
Yeah. So, Jeremy Welch from Casa, founder of Casa, who's also a good friend of ours.
Shout out Jeremy.
He sent us some Casa nodes. So we could test out Sats app, because I actually didn't have a Casa node to begin with. And I had played with your Casa node back in the day. I have to say, whatever they did on like the software, because the hardware is the same, whatever they did on the software side, it is so much more responsive and easy to use than it was before. Like, it's like a very usable node that's got great UX, super user friendly. Their customer support is fantastic if you have any issues. And now they have, so Casa has this multi-sig where they offer 2 of 3 multi-sig and they offer 3 of 5 multi-sig. The 3 of 5 multi-sig is really interesting to me because you bring they actually provide hardware wallets as part of, it comes with a subscription fee. It's an $1,800 subscription fee, which is pretty steep for a lot of people. But if you're a big holder and you're going to use a custodian anyway, then it's like a really good option. But then they also have this node. And I think the dream is that eventually the node will verify all the transactions for your multi-sig, but right now it doesn't. But what they do have is they have this separate app called the Sats app, which you can connect to your node. And that's more of like a hot wallet. It's more of, you can use it for Lightning. You can use it for regular Bitcoin transactions, like when you're on the go and it's mobile and it's single key, but everything goes through your own node through Tor. The connection is super seamless because not only is Tor great for privacy reasons, which I love that you can run your Lightning node and Bitcoin node through Tor using their node. Really easy, just a toggle switch. But Tor is great because routers have all these issues of outbound connections and outbound ports. So it makes it really difficult for like an average user to pair their phone with their node back home securely and privately. But with Tor, you route around that issue. So you enable Tor on the Casa node, and all you have to do is scan a single QR code on your phone, and now your Sats app is connected to your Casa node back home wherever you are. You could be like around the world, and then you can pay using Lightning, using your own node as a complete noob with a beautiful UX, like anywhere you go. And like, that's fucking badass.
So that brings up like a crazy, this is just me thinking, I don't even weirdly, but adversarially here. Like if you go cross borders, but you have the Sats app on your phone and the border patrol is like, are you carrying more than $10,000? And on your Sats app, it looks like you are, but you're controlling it from your home. Like what is the law there? Like,
well, I mean, it's really in the cloud, on the blockchain, yeah, right? You just exactly. have the keys to it. But then even if you wanted to go further than that, like the node seems like it's more of at the node because you're like remotely connected to it. I mean, they could say that about any mobile wallet you have. You should turn off your phone when you go through the borders. Ideally, you shouldn't have anything on your phone when you go to the borders, even if it is turned off. The reason I say turn off your phone is because the newer like Samsungs and iPhones and stuff are encrypted, and the encryption's stronger if it's off, like because they don't let you use your fingerprint or your face ID and stuff like that. It's not even initialized. So it's best to go through with your electronics encrypted and completely turned off with as minimal Bitcoin stuff as possible. What's interesting about Sats app is they are using a username password concept. So you could presumably uninstall it and then reinstall it when you get across the border and just sign into your Sats app account. And they did it all in a way that they're using their own servers as minimally as possible to protect your privacy. They also have this Sats tag to pay people. Like if you wanted to pay me, you just type in Odell and you can pay me, which is like pretty clever. That's like bridging the gap to like the Venmo Cash App user experience, you know?
Yeah. Slowly but surely.
Oh, and they added this heartbeat feature, which I was showing you earlier, which is
this seems
pretty
cool.
Clever.
And this seems something like a dumb user like me needs.
Yeah. So like a lot of the issues people have is, you know, they like set up their node and they put it in a utility closet or something out of reach. And then presumably like a couple of weeks down the line or 6 months down the line, they go to make a payment at some store that accepts Bitcoin, or they go to pay someone, or they go to accept a payment through their Sats tag, and their node is offline and isn't updated, and is just, they need to go home and do it. They can't do it remotely. So what this heartbeat does is it allows you to privately check if your node is running and responsive and good to go from the app wherever you are. And to encourage that good behavior, they are incentivizing users by giving them Sats back if they get on streaks. So like they gamified it. So if you do the heartbeat, it's just a couple buttons. You just click it, goes through Tor. And then they'll give you like, you know, some small amount of Sats, for your streaks, which is really clever. They're making it easy as possible for,
for the masses to run their own node with a good UX in a plug and play fashion. Also, the other thing, I just had lunch with Jeremy the other day, and I was like, I was trying to steel man Casa a bit. And something that's not noted a lot is that, you know, auto updates are like a big risk factor, like especially when nodes come in line, right? Because if you have an attack like SegWit 2x or something, and they try and update your software with a malicious change, what's nice about Casa is everything is a manual pull. You can't. There's no auto updates for the node. So I thought that was, it's just Casa once again showing that the priorities are in the right place, that they're doing the right things.
Yeah. No. It's. I've had many conversations with Jeremy too, and I think they're thinking about this sovereign data vertical very, very smartly. Trying again, that's the whole ethos of Casa, just trying to get your personal data and your wealth into your own hands.
I think right now I'm running 5 Lightning nodes.
I've got, this will be my 3rd.
So yeah, I'm gonna have to clean that up a bit. Oh, the other thing, I don't have this on the list, but I tried out Breeze Wallet. Have you tried out Breeze Wallet yet?
Have not. There's so much to try out.
Yeah, shit is clean as fuck. It runs a full Lightning node on your phone, but it's not running a full Bitcoin node. It uses Neutrino filters to pull the Bitcoin data. But it's probably the easiest non-custodial experience on Lightning right now. The setup happens within like 2 minutes while it syncs Neutrino in the background the first time. Then after that, the sync is like super quick. And what's cool is they open, I don't know how scalable this is, how long they're going to be able to do this. But when you do one of the issues with Lightning, non-custodial Lightning wallets, is you need liquidity, specifically inbound liquidity, which the future plan to solve this is that you open outbound liquidity and then you loop out so that you have some inbound liquidity. You basically send a transaction to yourself through Lightning back out as an atomic swap to yourself. What they do is a lot simpler, and it's also kind of allowing them to become a very influential Lightning node on the network. But they open an inbound liquidity channel to you right away when you open the wallet. So immediately upon syncing, which is like 2 minutes, a Breeze wallet, you can receive Lightning payments.
That's pretty badass.
In a non-custodial fashion.
Pretty badass.
And the UX is sexy as fuck. It's really sexy UX for a Lightning wallet.
Who's behind the Breeze team?
I think it's an Israeli team. And supposedly, I mean, I was listening to Noted Podcast yesterday. Another good podcast, part of the Independent Bitcoin Podcast Network. And Pierre was saying that they're using the Dart programming language, which is interesting, which is out of Google.
Ah, very interesting.
Yeah.
I got to check out Breeze. That's what, like, there's so much stuff. And again, that's what makes me very optimistic about the future. There's so much to try right now.
And that's spelled Breeze without an E at the end.
Yeah.
So Breez.
No, and that was, it's going back to BitBlock Boom. There was a very cool multi-sig wallet there, Hexa.
Hexa wallet.
This team, I think they've been in stealth mode for a while. They're just going on the...
They're out of London, I think.
Yeah, they're out of London. This was their first... conference they went to, but I got the demo from Anant, one of their founders, and it seems pretty foolproof. And then, like, I made you go get the demo and like run them through the gauntlet just
It was funny because he's been in my DMs since I launched Final Message, right? Because one of the ideas here with the Hexa wallet is it is a full, they have both multi-sig in the wallet, but the beauty of their implementation is they use Shamir's secret sharing as a backup system in case of situations where something happens to you or happens to your devices.
Yeah, and you have to split your backup pretty aggressively.
Yeah, yeah. So they allow you to split it easily with like contacts. You can, you know, write down part of it or whatever, and then there's a threshold, so like a certain amount of them need to come forward to allow you to recover your funds, so that it would require, and like they have like common sense defaults to prevent you from getting in situations where like your friends can collude against you, and they thought of a lot of that stuff. So there's a lot of overlap there with something like Find a Message. So I've actually been talking to him through DMs for the longest time, and there was a DM from him that he was like, "I'll see you tomorrow at the conference." And I would have been like, I was like waiting for him to like come up to me because I have no idea what he looks like. You know, I know he knows what I look like. I didn't realize that they were a sponsor and they had a table like there. So when you told me that, I was like, oh, fuck. And I went outside and I talked to him. So the wallet's not out yet.
No, not yet.
And I haven't, like, he walked me through his test version on his phone, but they should have a test version out pretty soon. He's going to send us the link as soon as he has it. So then I will be able to walk through it myself, and we'll be talking about it more on future episodes. The other thing is, some people were giving Gary shit about, like, he released, I'm really glad he released, Gary Leland of BitBlock Boom, I'm really glad he released Bitstein's Talk for free, considering all the drama. But, he kept the ticket prices really low. And the reason people were, like, annoyed that he was charging $99 for the stream for everyone else, for all the other talks. And, you know, he did it in a really small venue. He sold it out. It's very hard to run one of these small conferences while keeping your ethics and your morals. And that's why the $99 for the video is a very easy way for him to, I think, at a relatively reasonable price, for him to get more money, because he doesn't have to get a bigger space. You could be around the world. You don't have to travel there. You can just get it. And he is releasing the full set in 2 months for free. The reason I thought about that is because Hexa was like one of three sponsors.
Yeah.
They had like no sponsors. They were all reasonable companies. Quinn Solo was one of the other ones.
Shout out Quinn Solo. Thank you for the gear.
I have my notebook here. He made us these like customized notebooks. I might post a picture on Twitter of this. It is so fucking cool. These like leather bound notebooks. And he even thought far enough ahead he gave us extra notepads so that we can like put in the notepads in the cover. What a boss. And we met his wife. Great people.
Quinn Solo, very good brand. Go check out. We'll put the link in the
QUINSOLO.com.
And no, I actually, Quinn Solo got me stopped at security because they thought I had a flask full of alcohol.
Oh yeah. He gave us customized flasks, leather bound flasks with the TFTC logo and our names on it. Fucking badass.
Shout out Quinn Solo. No, again, it was like, and bring it back to like BitBlock Boom and people giving Gary shit. Yeah, this is a man who's trying to run an ethical concert. Why do I keep saying concert? An ethical conference.
We gotta do a concert next year.
We'll all be singing next year. And I think he did a really good job. Like, he curated great speakers, and again, it was the vibe. Like, as much vitriol as you're seeing on Twitter from people who weren't there, if you were there, like, it was all high vibes. Like, people just, nothing crazy. It was people just happy to be talking about Bitcoin with each other.
Yeah, but that just got me thinking. Yeah, when I went down to BitBlock Boom, I'm like really OCD when I travel. Like, people, like Crypto Brecky and shit is wearing like an Open Dime and like Bitcoin shirts and stuff. I look like the average fucking person. I have like a minimal amount of Bitcoin stuff in my bag. And then on the way home, I'm like sweating and going through TSA because I just got like shit tons of swag in the bag, you know?
Swag in the bag? No, I do. Yeah. For somebody.
You got to get pre-check. I got pre-check, so I didn't even have to take off my shoes.
I do need to get pre-check. I've been flying a lot more recently, and I think I got to start signing up for airline miles and just bite the bullet with pre-check.
Do it.
Dude, we're almost an hour in already. We got so much to go. This is going to be like an hour and a half rip.
The next thing I want to touch on just real quick, because we touched on it last time. Last week, we told you to watch the episode with Stefan Levera, Why Hardware Wallets Suck, with Michael Flaxman, who we also met last week. If you haven't seen it, if you haven't listened to it, listen to it. The big takeaway, you know, no matter what, when we do podcasts, the second we stop recording, I'm like, should have fucking said that, didn't say that, literally every time. The thing I should have said was, the key takeaway here is that every single hardware wallet has trade-offs. You need to be aware of the trade-offs, but the best way to minimize those trade-offs is to combine it with other hardware in a multi-sig, because then both of the they both have to be compromised. It makes it much, much harder for you to get attacked.
Yes. Michael Flaxman, incredibly smart. Like, I was talking to him about like unique multi-sig schemes that you can set up, and he's just thought about this stuff from a different angle than anybody I've encountered at this point.
And don't get frustrated. We know multi-sig is very difficult to set up right now. It will get easier. Everything gets easier quicker than you think it's going to get. Just be aware of these things.
Yes, be aware. Another thing you should be aware of is what I wrote about in the Bent this morning, which is the Erebus attack that was discovered, or I don't know if it was discovered a couple of weeks ago, but it was announced a couple of weeks ago. A couple of researchers from, I believe, the University of South Korea, University of Singapore, or a couple of researchers from Korea, Singapore, and Japan. I don't know exactly what schools they're associated with, but they made the world aware of this Erebus attack that can basically, if you are a large internet service provider, an ISP, you have the ability to sort of recognize Bitcoin nodes that are running on your network. And if you are large enough, you can target particular nodes and try to partition them from the network. And you do this slowly over the course of weeks by forcing a reboot of the node. The ISP would force a reboot of a node that they're targeting. And then that node would have to make more outgoing connections. And the ISP is hoping that they're making outgoing connections with their malicious nodes, and then after a certain period of time, if they get all 8 outgoing connections connected with their malicious nodes, they can begin doing double spend and 51% attacks, hypothetically. So this is just something to be aware of, the risks that exist with huge ISPs. Many people may not know it, but a lot of Bitcoin nodes are run in the cloud. There's only about 10,000 full nodes that are listening. And this is just another example of sort of a niche part of Bitcoin, particularly the peer-to-peer layer, that you have to be aware of. And this is a vector that I could certainly see a nation state trying to take advantage of in the long run.
So my understanding here is there's a couple things. So pretty much all cryptocurrencies are vulnerable to this type of thing. It's just the nature of the internet. There's multiple precautions here that are important that Bitcoin has already prioritized, which is, first of all, to keep node costs cheap so we have as many nodes as possible. Run a node today, guys. You know, either install the Power Node Launcher. Did I just pronounce it right?
Yeah.
Power Node Launcher.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, buy a Casa, buy a Noddle. Run a node. The other thing is keep Bitcoin bandwidth requirements low so that you can run your node through Tor, right? I think Tor makes it a lot more difficult to do this attack, if not impossible, would be my understanding. So any types of side channel capabilities that we have where you can broadcast and fetch blocks outside of your traditional ISP gives you redundancy. So if the ISP is playing games, then you can connect to nodes and broadcast transactions and stuff like that through other means, stuff like mesh for sending, mesh nets for sending, and like the Blockstream satellite for receiving.
Yes, and I actually had a very good conversation with Gleb Nalmenko, who's actually working on both these problems, both bandwidth and this Erebus attack. And he's actually, to quell any fears out there as we're talking about this Erebus attack, there are solutions being worked on and there are ways to prevent the attack in the future. We're just lucky that somebody was able to highlight the attack and point it out so we can architect ways to prevent it in the future. And there's two main ways that Gleb described to me. The first is you basically make it so any nodes outgoing connections can only connect with certain IPs which are associated with certain ISPs. So you create a threshold by which, like, hey, you can only get two connecting nodes from this ISP, two from that, and sort of diversify your risk in that way. And the other solution is to increase the amount of outgoing connections that you have, because the probability that a malicious actor will be able to get all the outgoing connections, say if it was 16 instead of 8, is severely reduced.
And what is it, Utrexo? Is that the one that I'm thinking of? What's the one? There's a new proposal that reduces the bandwidth requirements if you have large, like it doesn't scale linearly if you add
Erlay
proposal.
Yeah, so Gleb's working on Erlay.
Yeah,
and that's actually, so we talked about Erlay, and then he's actually, while they're waiting to get the official BIP for Erlay launched, he's just working on this Erebus attack for shits and gigs. Not for shits and gigs, but he's just working on another area. And yeah, he seems pretty confident that there will be a solution to this problem pretty quickly. And the beauty about P2P changes to Bitcoin at the peer-to-peer layer is that you don't need a soft fork or a hard fork. You can make them, they're not consensus compatible rules. So there's not really a lot of pushback in getting this implemented, and it can just be adopted by nodes one at a time over time.
Yeah, Utrexo is that hash-based accumulator.
Oh, Utrexo.
Yeah, oh, sorry.
Utrexo.
I read more than I speak. I don't know how I have a podcast. But yeah, I like this would be right now, if someone was to do this on the Bitcoin network, it seems like it'd be a pretty aggressive attack as it is. Yeah. I think like this is why it's really important that you can run a node at home, because I think any of these cloud providers could do similar types of attacks, obviously. And there's only a few big ones. So like if most of your nodes are running on like AWS and Azure and shit, like that's going to be, it's going to make you a lot more vulnerable just in general.
Yeah. So be aware of that. And no, it's just another example of the vigilance that one needs to have when interacting with Bitcoin. It's such a critical system, and it can be attacked from so many different areas that we just have to be hyper vigilant. That's a great example of a team spotting something, saying, "Hey, this is could be a problem in the long run," and hopefully quickly patching it and just move on to the next one. But in the long run, this makes Bitcoin stronger. So this is an overall net positive, I would say.
Bitcoin Optech just released their BEC 32 plus RBF replaced by fee compatibility matrix.
Yeah, it's a sweet matrix.
It basically just tells you which services support them.
Yeah, it's like a checklist of whether or not they're BEC 32 compatible, SegWit compatible, RBF compatible.
And I think they're going to add more things to the matrix.
Yes.
Yeah, so more services.
So if you want to go see if your local Bitcoin service provider is transacting on the network as efficiently as possible, the link to this matrix will be in the show notes.
Matt Corallo got hired by Square Crypto, first hire after Steve Lee.
Huge shout out to Matt. I owe a debt of gratitude to Matt Corallo. He's one of the first guests on this podcast. He's one of an individual who has helped me come to understand Bitcoin a lot better than I would have had not met him. And I couldn't be more pumped for him. And he's an incredible example of somebody who's just down for the cause to make Bitcoin better. Like, he started out at Blockstream, found a Blockstream, then he moved to Chaincode. He's got his stuff done at Chaincode now, and now he's going to start a legacy at Square Crypto. So couldn't be happier for Matt or Square Crypto, because I think Square Crypto has got a great asset. And if you want somebody to sort of be the stalwart of a dev team working on Bitcoin, I think Matt's a perfect candidate.
So now we have four major groups that are working on funding core developers. We have Blockstream, Chaincode, MIT Media Lab, and now Square Crypto.
Yeah.
So that's badass. The more the merrier.
No, and I think I don't want to shout out to Blockstream, Chaincode, and MIT for paving the way and showing how you can do a funded model for core developers. But I think Square Crypto in particular, as they start building out this team, just the signaling of a huge public company doing this is so massive. I hope and I do think that it will lead to sort of like a flow of resources towards Bitcoin core development in particular.
I mean, Matt's a badass. We love Matt. He's done so much. I'm so thankful to him. So fucking smart. They hired Steve Lee as the head of the whole operations. He's the fucking boss. He's a great dude. They have Miles Suter there, who's a good friend of ours. They're also a sponsor of the pod while I do all this shill fest. Yeah. But we love them before that. The one thing I want to note here is that it's not like so yes, Matt was with Chaincode, but they're not. Rumor is that he's the only developer that they're pulling from somewhere that he's already getting paid. Everyone else is going to be people who aren't currently getting funding for their core development work. They're just doing it on a voluntary basis. So it is going to be a massive net benefit here. And they are a publicly traded company, which is pretty huge.
Yeah. No, I just think from, again, social signaling to other, like, again, you had to give it to Square too for sticking their necks out and taking this risk. Like, hey, yeah, we're going to hitch our wagon to Bitcoin in some capacity, at least for the foreseeable future. And that just causes other companies in their vertical competing with them to be like, what the fuck? How are we not doing this?
Supposedly the whole idea was just like Jack was like at a hack deck. Shout out to Jack for accepting the lightning torch for me at the bottom of the bear market.
Shout out, Jack. I know you're listening.
supposedly they were doing like a Square hack day or whatever, and Jack's like, what's like the most important thing we could do for Bitcoin? And they were like, we're going to start funding developers.
Well, they're putting their money where their mouth is, it seems. So, again, shout out to Matt Corallo and Square Crypto. I think great things are going to come from that. And yeah.
This one's really cool. Did you by any chance see the Hong Kong article I posted from Quillette? How do you pronounce it? Quillette.
I have not seen it, no.
It's about how the Hong Kong protests have been so... we're going to drop the link in the show notes. But the Hong Kong protests have been more successful than a lot of other protests because they're embracing a distributed nature. Everything about it is distributed. There's no major leader or talking head. There's more like sub-leaders that as they get arrested, like new leaders can come up. They have like a Reddit-like forum where they're like planning different protests and different operations. Instead of staying in like one place, they actually like fall back and retreat and live to protest another day instead of getting arrested.
Pause.
I think what Bruce Lee said, be water. And they're like, that's what they're trying to embrace. We see with the live streams, with the videos, they're getting stuff out there that gets media coverage. Specifically, so they have like a lot of different people that are talented in different ways, all contributing, even stuff like supply funds and stuff like that. And this is like what Bitcoin's all about. What, you know, this whole concept is about being resistant to centralized actors through distribution, right? And it got me thinking. I started thinking about like you could even take it to like the next level and like future protests. Like their donations and their funds that they can receive from around the world can be held in multisig addresses. You can arrest like 10 of the guys, but if it's a 12 of 20 multisig, you know, you still can't take the funds.
No, you'd be able to take the funds if it was 10 of 20 multisig. It was like
if it was a 12 of 20. If it was a 12 of 20.
If it was an 8 of 20. If it was an 8 of 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I get what you're saying.
What I'm saying.
I'm right? Sorry for ranting on your parade.
I don't know if I fucked that up, but either way, like multisig could be really interesting in those types of situations. Bitcoin in general. I mean, I'm not implying that they're using Bitcoin. I don't think they are.
No.
But it is pretty powerful to see it actually play out in a real world situation where lives are on the line and high stakes.
Yeah. No. It's crazy. And again, sorry for being a dickhead there.
Yeah. No worries. That's what we do on this podcast.
No, it has been incredible, like, and in how it's evolved. Like, they moved from Telegram to, we were talking about a few episodes, like Facebook airdropping. They adapted the lasers where they were trying to make it so their face is going to be recognized, and they were using cash at the train stations. And yeah, it's a very, very innovative protest. And like you said, Bitcoin just makes more and more sense. And we're not saying that they're using Bitcoin in any fashion now, but it could empower stuff like this to an even greater degree if used appropriately. We still got a lot to go here. Staying on protests, like the Yellow Vest protest, not very well covered in the mainstream, but it's still going on. 40th straight week.
Yeah, we've had some tweeters poke us about that, so I wanted to make sure that we talked about it a little bit. 40 weeks, man. Yellow vests against anti-Macron.
9 months.
Yeah. It really doesn't get that much media coverage.
No, it really doesn't.
Well, I just wanted to shout out to them and just keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah.
I don't really know anything about it because it doesn't get that much media coverage.
They've been like still, it's like an aggressive protest still. The few videos that I've seen recently, it's a confrontation between the protests and the police.
I guess when I say media coverage, I mean, I don't really see much of it on Twitter. I don't watch I imagine like CNN and stuff isn't reporting it, but who knows?
I don't know either. I mean, yeah. Did you catch CNN in the airport this weekend at all? I missed it.
Nope.
Yeah.
They got to get that ratings boost by just having to play on empty screens all the time.
What do we think about the new Satoshi? Do we like his numerology?
So this was another thing that it got brought up during our live pod. And when I finished recording the pod, I was like, fuck, should have said that. You know, the key here is that if someone wants to claim to be Satoshi, they could trivially at least prove some credibility to the fact that they're Satoshi by either signing a message with private keys from one of the early coins or moving those coins. This is one of the beauties of Bitcoin, is that through the internet, anonymously, you can trustlessly, or at least trust minimized, prove that these funds are yours, that you control these funds, that you're the person that has these keys. Craig has never fucking done that. And this guy hasn't done it. Instead, he hires a PR agency and does all this bullshit. So you could just know that whoever he, she, they is, that is Satoshi, they absolutely know that if they actually want to flex and tell people for some reason, that's how they're going to do it. The first thing they'll do is no bullshit. Here's early keys. And obviously, that's not still proof, depending on how early the keys are and whatnot. Maybe the keys got stolen, stuff like that. But that should be the first fucking step. It's like a huge red flag if you don't see that. So you can just safely ignore this scam artist.
No, and I think it's important for us to point out a little bit of Bitcoin history. Like, I believe one of Satoshi's emails got deprecated. Like, he forgot to renew it, and somebody got a hold of it. And I believe in like 2015, 2016, somebody sent an email purporting to be from Satoshi's email.
But wasn't that kind of friendly? Because he was like, I am not Dorian.
Yes, it was that.
but still, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Like, that's just an email address.
Yeah, Greg Maxwell actually has a great post. I don't know if it's on the Bitcoin mailing list or on Reddit, but he basically explains, like, we'll never truly be able to believe that anybody who claims to be Satoshi is Satoshi unless it's a signed message. And then even at that point, you would still have plausible reason to believe that they could have acquired that in a different way. So,
yeah, I mean, the way I feel about it is, if you're not signing early keys, you're not moving early funds, you just go fuck yourself. And then if someone does that, then, you know, we can address it then.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this one wasn't even...
I think so.
This one wasn't even interesting.
Yeah, I think he, she, they is smart enough that they have plenty of other fucking coins besides the ones that are like the so-called a million known Satoshi coins, which we don't even know if necessarily Satoshi has those. That's just analysis of the blockchain. And is obviously a smart enough individual to know that it's a net benefit for them for those coins to just never move.
Yes. I agree with that sentiment and that statement.
And why would Satoshi stay anonymous this long and then want to...
Yeah, why
himself?
Give it up now?
It's like fucking killing the OPSEC game, or she, or they, or whatever.
Yeah.
Hopefully Satoshi's a listener. If you are, thank you for your service.
Yeah. Shout out to you. Built something pretty cool. We're here talking about it all the time. Did you know this was going to happen, Satoshi? Yeah, that's all we got for this week.
We have a couple other things.
Do we?
We have one more thing. I just wanted to wish Lolly a happy birthday. It's been 1 year.
Oh. Happy birthday to Lolly.
I'll be celebrating with them today. They're having parties around the country, open bar, to give back to the community. And I think it's an open bar. I hope it's an open bar. Anyway, I'm going there today, so hopefully I'll see a bunch of you there. I really do think that Lolly is basically like weaponizing our debt-based society to like leverage consumer spending into pumping the Bitcoin price. And also, in a friendlier note, it's just a great way to onboard new people to Bitcoin who just want to save a little money when they're purchasing regular things. And they get to save it in sats. Hopefully we get sats on Lolly, since it is the standard soon.
Boss, sats is the standard. That's all we got in topics this week. If you freaks are liking this, any smash that subscribe button on any platform, whether it be your local podcasting platform, YouTube, Twitter, it goes a long way. And you can subscribe on our website too. Put your email in there and I'll dump you on the newsletter list. We're trying to blow this thing up. We were talking about Matt's hands in the beginning of the episode. We got more videos coming.
Yeah, manicures cost money, guys. So tftc.io/contribute. I know we run ads. Some of you think like that's a conflict a little bit. We love our ad partners. And right now everyone should be stacking as many sats as possible. So like, we don't take it personally if you don't donate, but we absolutely appreciate those who do. Yeah, we love you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. No pressure to donate at all. It's there. This stuff does cost money. It has, it's a labor of love for me, so I don't mind fronting the cost.
Yeah. It costs money and time, but we love doing it. Yeah. And, cause Bitcoiners are fucking awesome. The other thing is the reviews actually do make a big difference. The podcast reviews. I never realized that, but they do.
Yeah, they do. So if you haven't left a review yet and you feel so inclined to do so, please do that as well. What? Because they reviews have to deal with like your visibility on iTunes, particularly.
Yeah, how it pops up when you like search Bitcoin and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal.
Yeah.
We appreciate
you. And we didn't add Bitcoin to the title of our podcast on iTunes until like 3 months ago.
I had to pester you about doing that for a long time.
That's all we got this week, freaks.
Stay humble, stack sats.
Peace and love.